You're listening to the. Oh, wait a minute. This
wait,
is.
That's not right. That is absolutely not right. Okay, so starting over, you're listening to Bimmercast number 24. It is June 17th, 2010. We've got a ton of stuff to cover. We've got some special guests tonight, which we'll get to in just a second. But first, M1, 1M, whatever you want to call it. We're talking about it every week, so we're going to talk about it now. We're going to talk about Mini versus BMW in every way possible. So stay tuned for that. We've got the new 5 Series coming up. We've got 1 Series catching on fire and ultimately blowing up twice, if we've all watched Chips. And we're going to talk about BMW at Le Mans. So stay tuned. Okay, we're back this week with a couple special guests. Todd Pearson from White Roof Radio fame, and of course, the always, always, I would say, lovable and, I mean, I don't know what else to say, Don Burnside. I mean, you guys...
Too kind. You're too kind.
You guys are the heart and soul of White Roof Radio, which is, depending on the week, the most popular independent automotive podcast on iTunes.
Yes, it is.
Not depending on the week. That's pretty much every week, Mr.
Although, you know what? Somebody asked me, Adam Carolla's show. He's technically independent, right?
Yeah, but he's got real celebrity.
Yeah, he's a superstar.
He was on TV. You know, he had a top-rated morning show on real radio.
True. He talked about teen sex on MTV.
That's right. He was on Loveline with Dr. Drew. You know, Adam Carolla's a real... He was on The Man Show with Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, Adam Carolla's a real celebrity.
We should talk about Bimmercast because, I mean, the Bimmercast, which is, I would say at this point, it's clearly the longest-running BMW podcast on iTunes and in general. It's been pretty successful if you look at the stats on iTunes.
It's still featured. If you go to automotive section on iTunes, both the Bimmercast and White Roof Radio are two of the top 6 featured shows consistently on the front page.
I think there's something to be said there.
Because we know what we're doing.
Well, and I'm not going to... obviously we want comments, concerns, questions. I know, DB, you have that down. We want that on Bimmercast. We want to hear your reactions to what we say and whatnot, but so far we've had some pretty good comments and ratings.
Nice.
So you know, again, I mean, we remain humble about this because I mean, honestly, it's you guys who rate us, and we're just truly trying to serve the BMW community. So,
truly, open up iTunes and leave some nice words in the review section.
Truly, though, comments, concerns, let us know.
At least 4 stars, at least 4.
Yeah.
It's like a BMW dealer. If you don't get, what is it, Michael? If you
5
don't
stars.
Get 4, if you don't get 5, then you're
screwed.
They basically take the money.
You lose your next paycheck and your kids don't eat for a week.
Right. They take money from your paycheck and your children go hungry that night.
That's right.
Same goes for us, I guess, too, right?
Pretty much. I didn't want to say it, but pretty much.
So Gabe, you pay Michael about the same that I pay Todd.
Yes.
Excellent.
I pay Michael whenever I see him, I buy him a beer. And I think it's pretty much the same thing for you guys, right?
DB bought me a beer in Colorado, so.
I did.
Bitching and moaning goes to the contact form as usual.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But, I mean, all that aside, it's awesome to have you guys here. I mean, you guys represent the Mini side of the equation. You know, Mini is obviously the biggest sub-brand of BMW, and I hate to even call it a sub-brand. It is just a brand that the BMW Group owns. So follow me here. BMW Group, up high. So put your hand up way in the air. That's BMW Group. Put your hand a little bit lower and to the left, that's Mini. Put your hand at the same level to the right, and that's BMW. Now you kind of understand how this works. And you guys,
I would
run.
Say BMW is probably a little bit higher.
Hey.
Than any
We're
of
not,
based
I'm,
on sales.
I'm doing you guys and Mini a favor right now. So
okay,
don't
all
lift.
Right.
Don't look.
Excuse me. The Rolls Royce brand was left out of there.
Way lower.
That's down.
Lower.
It's like a little tiny sliver of the pie.
You know,
but
Gabe,
really expensive.
You know what would really, you know what would really help with the BMW brand, and maybe Bimmerfile could be instrumental in making this happen. This afternoon, I had the opportunity to go to the newest ride makers in Southern California. That's a place that's like Build-A-Bear, except for the guys. You know, you go and you build a car.
It's for little kids, though, right?
No, it's for adults too, dude. You go and you build the race car. Come on, it's cool. But BMW was not represented at ride makers.
Because BMW is not a fun Build-A-Bear kind of brand.
Dude, yeah. I could build a Corvette, a Viper, a Porsche. I could not build a BMW.
That's too serious.
It's never been a real collectible kind of die-cast car, if you will. I mean, there's a handful.
Michael, what do you say about that? I've got plenty of collectible die-cast BMWs.
I'm feeling that there's a lot of those die-cast BMWs floating around. I just think that the lawyers make it a little difficult for these bootleg companies to start doing things like building cars that are on license. That's just my
opinion. I want to say right now, Ride Makers
is licensed, by the way. They're licensed by Chevrolet and Mini and every brand that they represent in the store in toy form.
I don't think BMW wants to be associated with that look, though. It's a specific look. Let me just say, throw this out there. In my garage right now, I have a DTM E36 and E30 BMW. I know that means nothing to you guys.
I have to go to the Bimmer file. Check English to the English to BMW model number dictionary.
I also have the Harrods version of the McLaren F1 BMW powered, and the Longtail version of the BMW branded McLaren F1.
But to get those, you pretty much had to get them at a BMW dealer.
Not at all. Actually, my father ordered those for me in the mid-90s when I was a child.
Really? Really? Well, it's not exactly like you can go to... Let's just put it this way. You can't go to Toys R Us or Target and check in the...
Absolutely not.
And find anything with the BMW moniker on...
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Last time I was at Target, they did not have any Matchbox X5.
Well, last time I was in the Vienna airport, I found a number of BMWs at a local toy shop.
Well, that's Europe, I think.
In Vienna.
All right, you raise a good point. Well, besides the die-cast market, if you will, I do want to talk about a couple things. And we've got the normal stuff, but I thought we'd talk about something kind of fun to start with. And you know, you guys, will for the time being, because I know, Todd, you own a BMW. I personally am a big Mini fan, but let's sort of put the line in the sand here and say you guys are Mini, we're BMW. And let's have a little throwdown.
All right.
Okay. So BMW has the 135i. It starts around $36,000. You can get a couple options, and it'll be right at 40K. A couple nice options. Let's just say premium and sport package. Is that fair, Michael?
Is the catching on fire, is that an additional charge? Or
no, it comes free, but we'll talk about that in just a second.
That's okay. Bonus.
So yeah. 135i nice. Okay. With a couple packages, a couple options, no nav, versus let's think about this. What Mini is available for $40,000 out the door? The brand new WC50, the World Championship 50, which is a limited edition Mini.
Yeah.
With a JCW package. It's got a lot of really special options, including it's a one-off color.
Oh, let's face it. It's got a special color and a lot of carbon fiber. That's
so,
it.
A lot of carbon fiber. So
and red stitching.
Listen, you guys aren't off to a good start if you're going to be the ones championing this car. So let's go at it here. I say.
Well, Gabe, we could even do a 128.
No, Michael, let's really embarrass him here. Come on.
So okay.
I call bullshit. I have a 300 horsepower. Rear-wheel drive BMW at $40,000. What do you guys have?
Yeah,
we have a front-wheel drive 211 horsepower green Mini Cooper.
You guys are just giving up? It's not a Mini Cooper, DB. It's a John Cooper Works.
Wait a minute. It's got the John Cooper signature on the bonnet on the right bonnet stripe too.
So you.
So the 135 has
run flat tires.
Let me just tell you, number one, the 135 has run flat tires. I will sign every inch of the 135, and it won't be worth any more money than it is.
How about the JCW at this point doesn't catch on fire?
Okay. Fair.
How about the JCW comes from a lineage that is still living in the top 10 of the Motor Trend's fastest cars to the Slalom course?
Oh, probably the second best-selling car of all time.
What, are you talking about the Mini in general?
Yeah, the Mini in general.
Well, I mean, okay.
is that really what he's going with? That's crazy.
Is it the most valuable brand in the world?
Yeah, that's less than much.
I'd say pretty close.
Well, no, that's true. That was measured. The 135 is got 300 horsepower.
Yeah.
The 135 has
what's the weight on that thing?
More rear leg room. We'll even throw that out there. More rear
leg room. You can throw that out there.
Yeah, why not? and it's got think about this for a little bit. Twin turbo inline six, 3 liter.
Okay, what kind of gas mileage you pull out of a 135?
I don't know, Michael. I mean, when I had it, I averaged low 20s.
Okay. Low 20s, but if you're doing highway cruising, around 27.
I was going to say it's probably rated in the mid to upper 20s. So.
JCW?
My WC50 on the highway, I think, pulls 35.
35?
Yeah.
You cruising at like 58 miles an hour?
The way I drive.
So... I mean,
how's your maintenance with those minis?
About the same as it is for your BMWs.
So four years, 50,000 free maintenance.
Oh, you got us there. We're 3 years, 36.
Okay. So if you pull up to a stoplight next to, let's just throw this out there, I don't know, 300 ZX, Nissan. Are you nervous?
Down that. Been there, done.
It depends on the driver. Does he have a backwards? Is his hat on back to front? Does he have the spiky hair?
Let's just say he's decent.
Neon lights? Are there neon lights coming out?
No. Anything? Let's just say he's average. Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm nervous.
I'm not nervous if there's a left turn involved.
Good answer. Good answer. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
How's the torque steer in that Mini?
It's quite lovely, actually. Thanks for asking.
Splint worthy. How's that? It's splint worthy.
Let's just say that the car knows where it wants to go.
Right.
It's a good thing the 135 doesn't have that problem.
Yeah, the rear wheel drive kind of has it going for you.
What's the 0-60 time in the 135?
Was it 4.9? Is that the official time?
Official time is 4.9, but I believe it's
quite a bit lower than that, right?
Quite a bit lower than that.
Wow. Okay. Official time on the JCW is still not even below 6 yet.
But
the 128 is quicker than that.
Yeah, so we're not even going there, but
yeah. So, it's a losing battle here.
So what kind of racing heritage does the 1 series have?
It's true. It's a good point. The 1 series has been racing for the past 5 years. So it's a good point.
Okay,
but
okay.
Before that, it's a direct descendant of the 2002 and, you know, all those great BMWs that come before it.
Okay, well, you can probably say the 3 Series is a descendant of the 2002 also, right?
Oh, okay, all right.
Right?
You know, as far as direct lineage, I think you got us. There's no question about it. But
well, 2002 has a storied racing history, does it not?
It does, it does.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
but I don't tell
yourself short.
I think if you're looking at if you want to count apples to apples, it's kind of tough. I mean, so in general,
what's the Bluetooth headset ratio to car on a 1 Series versus the Mini? Because on the Mini, the Bluetooth headset ratio to Mini, it's probably, I would say it's really low.
Yeah,
I would say less than 2 drivers in 100, maybe less than 5 drivers in 100.
It may be higher. In all seriousness, I will say.
And why? What about or white collared shirt drivers?
It's because the 135 owners have jobs.
Okay,
and can afford premium gas.
Well, the Mini drivers need to afford premium gas too.
That's true. So in all seriousness, though, I think that it's interesting because you look at BMW. And obviously the BMW group and they're positioning the Mini in this way, and it's kind of fun to look at the WC50 or the highest end Mini and start to compare it. You have to, if you're buying the WC50 though, in all seriousness, and I think you guys will probably agree with me, you have to really want the best Mini, period, bar none. I know I can buy more, I don't care, I want the best Mini.
Well, I know the one here in Kansas City not only sold for the $40,000-plus list price, but they had Bilstein coilovers put on this car. He put on – he took off the JCW brakes, if I'm not mistaken, and put something else on, which I think was a mistake.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
This guy dumped at least another $10,000 into this car over what it was. So as far as Gabe is concerned, he probably ruined the fact that it's a WC50.
It's true. I mean, yeah, I would say so. But, so that's our Mini versus BMW. I do want to talk about a new BMW, and Michael, it just recently came out just yesterday. In fact, Todd, you saw it as well. It's the new limited edition Frozen Gray M3.
Wow, what is shocking about the fact that it's going to be gray? Nothing.
I have to admit, that is probably very, very true. I mean, as a BMW fan, and Michael, you can attest to this, you know, we're hearing all these rumors, the 1 Series, the 1M, it may have Inca orange, it's going to have interesting retro colors or options, and here we are looking at a $77,000 gray M3.
Yeah.
Oh, you were talking. I'm sorry.
Great.
I was bored by the fact it doesn't have any shine to it.
Yeah.
So, Michael, you are a card-carrying member.
So it's going to look like it's fresh out of the body shop?
Michael, you're a card-carrying member of the I Hate Flat color or matte colors.
No, that's where it's at right now, man. That is such the trend.
It's like Ed Hardy clothes. They're cool for like 3 weeks, and then they're all the losers have them. Like,
it's true. Ed Hardy clothes are ridiculous, but I do think matte colors are kind of cool.
I think the matte is very cool. I think it's got a little bit of life left in it.
Okay, I think matte colors are for poor people that can't afford clear coat, and by BMW charging an extra, I don't know, $20,000 for the paint, it's just ridiculous.
Okay, well, I'll agree with the fact that it is ridiculous that the extra charge. But
no, I mean, in a nutshell, I think it's cool what they're doing, finally giving us a special edition car. The rest of the world had the M edition, which I thought was awesome with the beautiful stitching that contrasted on the seats and things like that. You know, if we could get those seats, that'd kick ass. But I see what they're doing. It's cool. I'm okay with it. I understand the whole purpose. They'll sell them out in 4.5 minutes. So,
how many are they selling?
I think there's only a couple dozen of them.
Hmm. So matte gray. I mean, is that a color that's available in the U.S.?
The Frozen Gray is exclusive to this edition.
So I cannot.
And it's not even that matte. Come on.
Wait a second. I'm curious about this. So if I walk into a BMW dealer and I say I want to order one of the individual colors, or I want to order one of the colors, period, that I can't get in the U.S., I can't order Frozen Gray?
Well, I'll just say this. Certain dealers have the ability to do certain things, and certain people with certain large checkbooks can buy certain things. So nothing is impossible. You can get this. It's probably going to cost you $10,000 just for the paint color.
Wow.
That's incredible.
You know, Gabe, I think maybe a pack of like a triple lot stainless steel wool probably take care of that for you on a.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's, you know, it's pretty
crazy. The same effect.
I think looking at the photos of this, and people will see, I'm sure if you go over to Bimmerfile there, that it's not as striking as I would hope for.
Well, it's gray. I mean, not to beat a dead horse, but it's gray. You know, I cannot get excited about a flat gray color. Flat black, maybe, flat white, anything. Gray,
there was a couple of them.
But Gabe, I don't understand why you have a hard time with flat gray. It's primer. It's cool. It's matte.
No, it's not gray.
It's cool.
It just looks like a dirty gray. I like matte colors. I think it's this color in particular is a bit of a mistake. And I look at BMW, and they probably look at this and say, well, by and large, people won't hate it, so they'll be okay with it, and they'll buy it.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah, I mean, I get the concept of the whole thing. I like the idea. It's
Frozen. Well, I mean, that's what they're calling it, right?
The only thing that's like appalling to me, in all honesty, is the red interior.
See, I love red interiors. Why don't you like that?
I just don't like the inserts, like the black everything, and then all of a sudden you have these red center ass sections of the seat in red, and then a red armrest. I mean, if they did red stitching, I'd be so cool with that. But or even M stitching, you know, just. Yeah.
I like the red interior that, and this is not the first time they've done this with that red leather on a BMW.
Well, red leather, I mean, if you look at even the 1 Series, 3 Series, I mean, the red leather is everywhere. I mean, just the standard right. 3, the M3. And I agree. I think just in general, it's a poor decision. I don't know who designed or put this car together. As somebody in the design profession, I can say it feels a bit uninspired.
It's disconnected is what I think, Michael, that's maybe where you're going there. Is it just doesn't fit this car? It doesn't fit this car.
It doesn't flow.
No. If there were a lot more, if there was some more bold accents on the outside of the car, if it were a different
color.
But see,
there's a point of view that basically says, I want something that's restrained and conservative on the outside. Yet when I open the door, I want to be wowed. It is like going and getting a bespoke suit that is gray and very traditional on the outside. But when you open it up, the lining, and maybe you're the only person that sees this, is orange.
Oh, so this is all like the mullet. Business in the front and party in the rear.
No, nobody, but okay, so that rationale, that means that nobody ever walks behind you.
Yeah, okay.
So, because I mean, what we're talking about here is something that is very much a personal thing. You get in, you're in your own very personal space, and that is where you have this little bit of flamboyance.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, you know, with my own car being black and black, the only thing I wish I didn't get was the black interior. So, I don't know. I was hoping for something cool with this, but...
There's not even a touch of accent red on the outside. Not red calipers, not red brakes.
No, yeah, but they can't do that. There's no parts. There's no parts, off-the-shelf parts, that would give them red. That's the problem, Todd. I mean,
and the brake lights are red.
That's true.
Oh, he's got a good point. The brake lights are red.
And the I'm going to call it a faux carbon dash. It doesn't even look like real carbon fiber to me. It looks like 3M material on that.
Yeah, it's carbon leather.
I will say the carbon leather is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's stamped.
It's truly like a weave. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, but it's like, you know, it's not carbon fiber. It doesn't have that gloss.
No, it's not carbon fiber. It's a leather type of thing.
Yeah.
So I think it sounds like the new limited edition M3 for the U.S. market is, at least us talking about this, is a bit of a miss.
Well, but Michael, you're right. They're going to sell out in 15 minutes. So, you know,
yeah, what do you think? They do better at marketing than we do. So,
will a BMW service crash when they finally go for sale?
Yeah. In fact, that's true. DB, they're going to actually offer it for pre-sale a week and a half early.
And they will sell twice as many as they expect.
By the way, since we're going to move on to another topic, let's wedge another one in there. Who on the phone is getting an iPhone?
Yeah, my
you know, I tried to, but the AT&T server crashed on me, and then they told me I was gonna have to wait an extra 2 weeks for my phone, so I said so I canceled it.
We're in two of them here in the household.
Yeah, you got through to wait online for anything or pre-order anything, so I'm gonna get one later, but we're getting two as well.
I have to walk down to the Michigan Avenue Apple Store to pick mine up, but
I have to walk down to our local store too to pick it up. But it is reserved; my name is on it.
Yeah, supposedly I actually did it over the iPhone. So a couple other things to talk about tonight. I think the other thing, since we're talking about M cars, let's talk about the 1M. This is
theme music for that from now on, Gabe.
It's funny. I was talking to my dad about the 1M. I've never talked about my dad on any podcast before. Never. And for the record, he's the reason why I'm into cars. You know, I grew up essentially under the hood of a 2002 because of him. And not trapped under the hood, I might add, but actually helping him work on the 2002. So when I told him that my thought is I'm probably going to get a 1M, he's really interested, and he's been sort of researching. Of course, he's been researching a Bimmerfile, and you know, his thought right now is, he asked me recently. He said, "Do you really want to get an Inca Orange 1M, because that is the rumor, of course. Mm-hmm. And you know, we don't really have any new information around the 1M other than the fact that, you know, twin turbo, inline six, 350-ish horsepower, MSRP mid-40s. I mean, Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what we've talked about in the past. Interesting retro type of or you know, vintage type of options, including interior or exterior colors and graphics. But just in general, you know, this is the kind of car that BMW used to make. It's a light M car. They didn't design the engine from the ground up, but it's interesting, and it's going to be the lowest priced M car in quite a while.
And Gabe, since it is coming from the M division, is this going to be just like scary fast to drive?
Well,
we would hope so.
Right now, you can dine and tune a 135 up to 400 horsepower. You know, do a lot to it now, and I'm sure this will be even, you know.
Well, my question is
more tunable.
Dine in. I mean, you know, and it's not that we don't like dine in, but we typically on the Bimmercast look at, you know, all sorts of tuning cars with a bit of a raised eyebrow a little bit. I mean, number one, there's advertised horsepower. Number two, there's real horsepower. But number three, you know, there is the total package. And we all know the M division and you know, in the mini world, it's JCW. But this is the big debate right now, is that JCW doesn't really live up to the M division. The M division delivers the total package. They deliver handling, they deliver braking, they deliver feel and power. Mm-hmm. So it's
I guess the question is 350-ish horsepower enough to call it an M in the 135 or in the 1M or whatever?
Michael, I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it is, absolutely. I think that as a society and as car people in general, we've gotten way too concerned about horsepower and forget about everything else that goes into designing a car that actually performs on the track. A lot of cars have more horsepower than, say, the M3 does, but once you get it on the track, the M3 slices and dices it. So I think the 135 version, which will be the 1M or the M1, if they go that way, which they're not, but is going to be in its own class, and it's going to be a step below the M3, but it's going to give you everything you want. It's just not going to give you that straight line 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds kind of thing going on there.
But, I mean,
it's going to be BMW's Mini. It's going to be wicked on the track. And it's still gonna have pretty decent 0 to 60, though. I mean, less than 5 seconds, it still doesn't suck.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's a good point, DB. You know, you know who is behind this car, who is the head of the M division? It's Dr. Kai Segler.
See, there you go.
Our good friend. And can I ask a question then, you guys? And, you know, this is rhetorical. You know the answer, but I'm going to let you answer it anyway. Is right now the 128 is outselling the 135. Is that correct in the U.S.? By like a considerable amount?
No,
like
I don't think it's considerable, but it is outselling.
I thought it was like 2-1.
I think it's more 3-2.
Okay. All right. So just slightly. Because personally, whenever I see a 1 Series driving around town, I'm not kidding. I swear to you, it's apparently a teenage girl putting on her mascara, and it's a 128, usually a convertible. I just don't see that many of them, and I don't feel they're selling that well.
It's really strange. Is here in California, every time I see a 1 Series, well, not every time, but most of the time, I see a 1 Series, it's a 135, and it's not silver. It's red, or it's black.
That's because people in California care about what they drive.
Yeah.
No, not really, because usually it's California is the capital of, like, the 328s.
Well,
in silver with automatic transmission.
Yeah, but there's a different culture. Certainly when I go there, I always notice it. But regardless of that, the truth is the 135 has been a bit of a disappointment for BMW North America.
There we go. That's what I was hitting.
And I think that, you know, if you look at it, and I've talked to a lot of folks, and Michael, feel free to chime in, I've talked to a lot of folks at BMW, and you read between the lines, I feel like they feel that they missed an opportunity. They missed an opportunity to make the 135 more special and just a little bit more different.
Yeah, I think
much more.
I think the problem is, and it's not that it's not the car's fault by any means. It's just the way the economies have been floating since it came to market. You're dealing with a car that's built in Germany and has a lot to do with the value of the euro. Bringing it to the U.S., it's a little expensive. You know, there's not that many people out there that want a two-door coupe that's kind of on the small side and has a lot of power right now. You know, I think that's a lot of it. And we also receive the car towards the end of its life cycle. It's phasing out by the end of next year, 2011, 2012. This body style will cease to exist in our world. So I think that's it too. It's kind of at the end of its life, and to us, it's almost new.
Yeah. It's interesting, and you think about the one M. I mean, BMW is essentially saying it doesn't matter. You know, if they create something truly special, it is going to sell in their largest market, which is North America.
You think that might kind of revitalize the one series games? Is that what you're thinking?
No. No, I don't think so. I really don't.
I think especially at $45,000, if you've got that to spend, and we have this discussion all the time over on the Mini side, if you've got that much to spend, chances are, now granted, the distance between there and an M3 is, what, 25, 30 grand?
No, it's 15.
15 grand? I am almost of the camp, if you're going to spend, if you've got 45 to spend, you've probably got 65.
I disagree, because I have 45 to spend, but I could maybe spend the amount for an M3, but I kind of don't want to.
But you want to spend 32 and go buy a used M5.
Well, so that's the thing. This is the thing. The M1, BMW needs to position the M1 as something special, and that's what they're doing. The 1M.
Well, if they do it orange, it's done.
But they're positioned as something that is unique. And something that is limited, and that is the difference. Because, in all honesty, if it looks to me just like another M product that I could buy, and it's gonna be around for a while, and I could buy secondhand years down the road, I'll go buy a used GT3 Porsche.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, I'll go buy the single best E46 M3 competition package available. You know, with 2,000 miles.
Yeah,
and I think that's where it's going to set itself off. The 1M is going to be maybe 8 months production run. You can't build that many cars in 8 months.
Yeah. And well, so that's the truth. I mean, you know, we're talking about a car that's super limited. I mean, on the Mini side, if you can imagine them building a limited edition JCW that is available only for a short time, maybe they get rid of the rear seats, maybe they put red mirror caps on it, maybe they make it truly special to the point where years down the road you look back at it and you say, wow, that's still pretty freaking special.
Well, if that's they do, Gabe, I guarantee you're gonna have in let's say 3 years, 4 years, you'll have his and hers.
But I mean,
now Gabe, what about BMW's bringing diesel cars to the United States? What about the 120D? That would be pretty special. It would be very unique. It would be a smaller BMW that gets fantastic gas mileage and still has the performance of a BMW. Is there any talk of them bringing that car to the States?
Well, I think the answer is resoundingly no. A couple of reasons. I think for one, the economies of scale don't work. If BMW is going to bring an engine, a diesel, another diesel, because they have a diesel right now in the U.S., it's the 335D,
and
or
it's
the
not selling for crap.
That's not true. I mean, Michael, I don't know if you may have the latest figures, but the X5 35D specifically has sold well.
Extremely well, yes. So the 335D, not so much. So
yeah, the 35D is what I was thinking of.
The X5 35D is a phenomenal product, because you're getting V8 kind of torque and performance for, you know, a six-cylinder mileage.
But a different class, right? An X5 diesel, you've got, and I know around here, a lot of people love to go to the lake. Every other person has a boat. It is a complete boat hauler.
Yeah. But absolutely. I mean, you know, on that set, I mean, I'll just get on my soapbox for a second. I think the 335D is the best 3 Series for 95% of people out there.
I think I would tend to agree with you on that. And why it's not selling is beyond me. Maybe it's the stigma of diesel. I don't know.
I think it's just marketing. It comes down to the fact that BMW hasn't invested enough to tell the story of the 335D.
Gabe, have you driven the 335D? I'm sure you have, right?
Yeah. I had it for
compared to a 328. How's it perform compared to a 328?
Much, much faster. And better gas.
A little bit more lively, right?
I don't know if lively. Actually, I think it's less lively, but it's certainly faster.
Yeah, the 328.
I drove a 328, and I was less than impressed. I thought I was driving a Camry.
Well, the 328 revs a hell of a lot faster than a Mini or a lot of BMWs.
Yeah.
If you get a sport package on it, it's nimble. I wouldn't say really nimble, but nimble. And it's relatively lightweight. Still an E90 3 Series, so it's not super lightweight. Whereas the 335D is heavier. Enormous amount of torque, though. Much, much decidedly faster. And I think because of that, much more of everyday, or I should say, just more comfortable car on your commute.
Okay.
And rumors are that there will be a new diesel coming in the not so distant future.
So the rumor I've heard is maybe something between the 120 and the 335.
Yes.
So maybe it's a 6-cylinder, but maybe it's just not turbocharged, or maybe it's single turbocharged, or maybe it's dual turbocharged but it's less horsepower.
Or maybe it's variable geometry turbocharging.
And you know, to answer your question then, Todd, I think you talk about performance and miles per gallon. You know, BMW came out with the 335D based on learnings from, I'd say, right around the 2004 era. So it's before gas prices went up. It's before Americans realized there was, you know, an actual environment to save. It's before a lot of things happened.
I still think there's an infrastructure problem with diesel too, because here in the Midwest, as many trucks as people drive around, many diesel pickup trucks that are around, you have to search for diesel fuel at a station somewhere. It's not at every station. It's not easy to find.
Oh, that's crazy. Here in California, I get by diesel almost everywhere.
Yeah. But still, it's not. I mean, granted, the majority of the market is going to be East Coast and West Coast. But you know, the entire.
I didn't even know there was a middle of the country left.
In Flyoverland, where Gabe and I.
Well, so for the record, Todd, you're in Kansas City. I am in Chicago.
Yeah.
And I mean, Chicago's.
It's probably not that much different in Chicago than it is here in Kansas City. You don't go to a gas station and have the option of your three fuels and diesel.
No,
you
typically most gas stations have one diesel tank in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe I'm just not looking for it, but I see it as an infrastructure problem too. And it's like the BMW engineers said when they were sitting here, you know, and Mini was trying to convince them to bring a diesel over. They're like, I don't see enough diesels on the road. I don't know why BMW is doing it.
Fleet economy. We need to get the miles per gallon up. And in the future, the not so distant future, BMW navigation systems will be able to tell you where to find your preferred choice of fuel and how much it costs.
Nice.
So that's why the navigation system is important. But I think beyond that, let's talk about the next generation of BMW and Mini. BMW is moving to front-wheel drive for some of their 1 Series products. So that means that this 1 Series, this front-wheel drive 1 Series, is going to share an architecture with the next generation Mini. But beyond the architecture, they're also going to share engines. And one of those engines, or I should say a family of those engines, will be 3-cylinder. We know on the Mini side that the 3-cylinder engine is capable of diesel-like
performance. I'm sorry, diesel like efficiency. Upper 40s, yeah. Upper 40s mm-hmm. on the highway. We can only assume that the BMW version of this vehicle will be available, you know, or will be attaining that same efficiency, upper 40s on the highway. We don't know if the BMW front wheel drive 1 Series is going to be around or available in the U.S. market, but we do know that it's going to be made.
Yeah, so, it's definitely going to be made. It's just, well, I, would, here, I don't think so.
So here's the
I
thing.
I would bet that car is going to be a huge hit, like in London, for example, where they get taxed heavily on a car's CO2 output, for example.
Well, and it's true. And I think, you know, so here's the thing. I mean, you talk about diesels in the U.S. What if you have a BMW and a Mini that gets 48 miles per gallon on the highway? I'm just throwing that number out there.
People forget about it. They will quickly even not even consider. They're like, diesel, what? What's diesel?
Yeah.
It's going to make them forget about it.
I mean, 120 some horsepower and that kind of mileage, that is incredible.
Well, and
I think what's going to be more interesting, though, is if when people figure out that the, let's just say the Countryman, for example, the new Mini R60, and the, let's say the next BMW 1 Series or whatever car they base on the same platform are essentially the same car underneath. And then they go to the Mini dealer and they say, oh, look, I can get a Countryman nicely equipped for about $37,000. And then they go next door to the BMW dealership and then they say, well, why does this car cost an extra $10,000 more than
Well, it's not the Countryman. It's going to be more the standard Mini Cooper, Mini Cooper S hatch. You know, this platform that's going to underpin the third generation Mini is going to be the same to underpin the front-wheel drive 1 Series. Now, the 1 Series is going to be split into two different types of products, rear-wheel drive and front-wheel drive. They're going to be named a little bit different, but that's generally what we've heard. I don't know if the front-wheel drive is going to be brought to the U.S. at all. My guess is probably not.
No.
But in European countries, it will be around, and I think the big question is, how are they going to differentiate the hatchback Mini, the standard Mini, and the hatchback 1 Series 2-door, which is built on the same platform, has the same engine, same electronics? How are you going to do it? BMW's answer, and we've read this in interviews, is chassis electronics. I think that's probably not quite the best quote. It's probably misquoted just in general. I think it's
styling too. They gotta make them completely different.
Oh, and absolutely, styling is an absolute assumption. We know that there's going to be
distinctly
difference. Well, hopefully not. Hopefully the build quality is about the same.
Yeah, well, for who? No offense, Mini guys. Mini build quality sucks compared to a BMW.
You have direct experience of that, and I've driven a Mini for the past week. In fact, I just gave it back today. Does it suck? I would actually argue that it doesn't, Michael. Especially the new ones are dramatically better than the old ones. But if you're judging a Mini from 3-4 years ago, couldn't agree more. I mean,
I don't know. I've had pretty good luck with mine.
Well, 235,000 miles.
Well, I'm just saying level of materials, fit, finish. You know, that's not even the same ballpark. Yeah,
put it this way. I've got 50,000 miles on my 2004 3 Series performance package, and the car has yet to have a single rattle.
Yeah.
Or noise or anything.
And that thing is stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, my mini rattles like the, what is it, Gabe? My Mini rattles like the Millennium Falcon doing the Kessel Run?
yes, in 12 parsecs. Or I was going to say the Edmunds Fitzgerald, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just want to make a quick point about the three-cylinder. And it was that if you take that really highly efficient three-cylinder motor that's turbocharged and couple that to a, say, active hybrid, the crazy efficiency and performance that would come along with that.
So now we're talking about 50s in the city.
Yes. So, and Gabe, as you and I both know, the active hybrids, they're very seamless and they're awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So you Mini guys, you should think about that. Can you imagine a hybrid Mini, like 50 plus miles per gallon in the city, maybe 50 miles per gallon on the highway?
What kind of a hybrid is it, Gabe? Is it the hydrogen hybrid or is it a regular electric
standard,
hybrid?
Standard electric petrol hybrid.
Yeah, lithium ion battery.
No, thanks.
You don't want that? You don't want 50s and everywhere?
No, because hybrids are a panacea at best. They don't help anything.
Why? They waste more
than they save.
Well, they waste
battery costs, lesser performance, blah 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 blah.
Well, I mean,
those batteries only last for like 10 years.
I disagree.
Technology now. I think I would disagree with that.
That's a technology that exists right now. Give me some better technology.
I disagree, Michael. I want to hear your thoughts because
I would disagree. You're thinking about the normal hybrid, like say from Toyota crash cars.
Sure.
You have to think about the BMW system of a hybrid where they actually increase the performance of the vehicle while still providing you with greater efficiency. It's pretty kick-ass.
I'm not concerned with performance. That's not my concern at all. My concern is just hybrids are – lazy people think that they're saving the planet because they're driving a hybrid, and they're really not.
But that's a Toyota mentality. I mean, the Toyota mentality is to say that essentially if you buy a Toyota, you're buying an appliance. Like full stop. That's what it is. Yeah. So a Toyota hybrid, by that measure, is just a more efficient appliance. So a BMW hybrid focuses on, and a Mini hybrid for that matter, would focus on the core attributes of the brand of the product. That means performance. Sure. And,
so you get
and
performance
efficiency.
And you get to feel good about yourself because you're saving money.
It may not be as ultimately as efficient as it could be. But that's because they're saying we don't want it to. We want to give you a little bit of performance as well.
Well, you're used to. For example, the 7 Series Active Hybrid. It's a V8 with this hybrid drive system, and it gives you the performance of almost the V12. So you can feel good about yourself and saying, hey, my car kicks ass. I can take a turn. I can go faster than anything out there, basically. But I'm not burning all the fuel and crap that the V12 is.
Sure, but I'm actually the wrong person to bring into this conversation because unlike the majority of people in the United States, I don't recycle my cars every 3 years. I drive a car until the wheels fall off. I usually keep a car for 7 to 10 years.
Well, let me and DB, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've actually cut out part of the floor on your Mini, and you have your feet go through the floor.
They do now. That's part of my propulsion system.
Right. So if we've I just don't have
the money to do the valve job. That's all.
Okay.
And you say yabba dabba do?
No, I don't. That's where I draw the line.
So in all seriousness, I think we've covered a lot of what we wanted to cover tonight. But one thing I wanted to talk about. Number one, Le Mans, and number two, when I get to the 5 Series review that you have, Michael. But Le Mans, so BMW won the 24 hours of the Nürburgring, just won it, straight up, amazing victory, something to be very, very proud of. But they go to Le Mans, and right away, it's very clear, and this is clear based on the communication that we saw with BMW executives and folks in motorsport, that they weren't expecting good results. And ultimately, through a lot of bad luck, I would add, because it could have been quite a bit better, they ended up in 6th place. Why is that? What happened?
New regulations.
Well, I don't know if they're new regulations. See, this is where I get all, for lack of a better term, I get pissy at this because I don't know if it's the ACO that just decided, hey, BMW, you won the Nürburgring, so now we're going to stick it to you until you have to really swap out the rear end.
Right, change.
Or if it's BMW, and Gabe, you and I have heard these rumors since September that they were going to enter this race, or BMW thought, hey, we're going to build this, we're going to have this car, and we're going to convince them that we don't have to make any changes, and that didn't work.
Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of both, to be honest with you. The fact they had to change the rear suspension is interesting to me. I think the restrictor plate increase is interesting. BMW won the Nürburgring because they outlasted Porsche, not because they had some incredible speed. So by that rationale, why would the ACO, why would they limit the air intake of the BMW and effectively slow them down. It makes no sense. I mean, is it political? It feels like it a little bit.
It's political, or somebody has a big stock stake in one of these companies.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, not to get too, you know, cynical about the whole thing, it doesn't feel right.
Well, and they finished, for people who don't know, they finished sixth behind three Porsches and two Ferraris.
Yeah. So BMW, they were in fourth until, I believe it was a drive shaft issue late in the race. So they could have theoretically finished fourth after a very long night. Even still, it's a huge disappointment. And I only say huge because we saw BMW win at the 24 hours of the Nürburgring, which to me, in my mind, is the tougher race. It's really a better measure of driver and car.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The Nürburgring is fantastic. It's just, you know, the thing that kind of caught me off guard with this whole race was when Dr. Tyson announced before the race even started that BMW had absolutely no chance. So he kind of threw the towel in and said, we're just here to take up space and hopefully finish.
Well, I think what he said, and we saw this elsewhere, is that, you know, this year, 2010, is really sort of a reconnaissance mission for BMW. We're here to race Le Mans. We're here to get a lot of data and understand how to win.
But then, you know, for me, looking on the, you know, outside looking in, I see Corvette racing GT2 this year. They raced GT1 last year. There's no comparison in the two classes. So they're racing with a brand new car also.
What do they finish?
They would have been much better if they didn't get totaled out twice.
it's tough. I will say that the biggest shame was the art car going out, just because of mechanical issues. In fact, the highlight for me was when Andy Prio, God bless him, went to the outside of the corner to try to get out of the way of the Audi, and the Audi actually spun around him in the gravel trap. And if you look at the in-car on the Audi, you basically get a beautiful, beautiful view of this gorgeous art car. That was my highlight.
Yeah, that, and when Dirk was out checking the rear end when they had the first initial problem with that car as well. It just seemed like that car was jinxed from the get-go. Looked good, though.
Yeah, it looked great. Really looked good. So, Michael, wanted to talk about your new, your 5 Series review. For those who haven't read the site, we've got the 2011 5 Series on the site, full review. We're going to have another review in July, in fact. I'm going to be driving the 5 Series as well, so we're going to have a different take on it. But, Michael, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are the car is better in every single way compared to the outgoing model. It's not even worth like comparing, to be honest with you. It's night and day difference. It's just come so far from a chassis standpoint, from a luxury standpoint, from an overall performance standpoint. The car is just so much better.
But it's heavier, though.
Yeah, it's 200 pounds heavier, and I think the only negative I could come away from the experience was in the 535, it doesn't feel as quick as the previous E60 did, and I think the weight could have something to do with that. It's not the motor by any means, so it's definitely the weight and probably the overall comfort and sound deadening of the car. It's really quiet. The even the 550 doesn't sound very loud. It's really quiet and more luxurious than sporty.
So what do you think about the styling?
I personally love it. It's kind of a cross between the 7 and the 3.
What do you guys, Todd, I mean, you guys, DB, you're seeing this thing, you know, the old 5 Series. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's I like some of the styling, you know, styling cues, and I think the way you put it, Michael, was a good point. It's kind of the best of the luxury of the 7 and a little bit more sportiness of the 3, you know? I don't know. I'm not terribly impressed. It's not like wow or anything like that, but you know, that's just
I agree. I personally find it hard to love the look of it. And I will admit that the E39 before the last generation 5 series, that shape, you know, I didn't love it until BMW didn't make it anymore. It's one of those things that, you know, I thought it was just boring. You know, I thought it was derivative and not interesting, and ultimately it became a classic. You know, maybe this is going to become that, but off the bat, I don't love it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a car you're going to love immediately. It definitely...
I'm not a dentist.
Yeah, it evokes much more emotion in person, and the lines definitely are more chiseled and deeper, and you really can't see the hood. It's like 3 Series refreshed, Gabe. How the hood has...
Yeah, you're right.
You can't see that in person unless you see it in person. It's no matter what you do.
Chiseled is a good word for it. Those sidelines seem a lot deeper, a lot more cut to me down the side of the car now. It's more noticeable in all colors, not just specific colors, it seems.
I would imagine white and silver would be really interesting in this car.
White's nice. Silver, I'm just tired of silver.
Yeah. I never see white BMWs, anything. I don't
really? That's all I would order unless there's ink orange available.
The only white BMW I see on a regular basis is Alpina.
Oh, wow.
The B7.
Yeah.
There's a white one around here that I see all the time.
Yeah.
That car is a great time.
It really is.
But the interior on this is actually a little throwback to the E39, Gabe. The pistol grip door handles.
Yeah, I see that.
And then the dash is really more driver oriented.
It's nice. Yeah, clearly they've taken consideration and criticism. You know, they've really listened to some of the criticism out there. But
I bet it's comfortable.
Exciting, very exciting. Well, unless you guys have anything more, I think we have hit the end of the show.
Yeah. I think that's it. Minus the, I think we touched on auto start stop, but that is rumored to be coming this fall to the U.S.
And so the mini guys are jealous.
It's on the automatic, is that right?
Yeah, it's on the, I think it's going to be, no, actually on the stick manual cars and the DCT.
Cool.
Which is interesting because as far as I know, the EPA, they will not rate this car at any higher efficiency, but real world efficiency is going to be greater. And that's because the tests they do for on the cars for miles per gallon happen when you come to a stop, that they actually put the car in neutral and let the foot off the clutch, which doesn't engage the stop feature on a manual transmission car. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's brilliant. The EPA is just brilliant.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So Mini's rationale when they were talking about it, it's offered in other parts of the world, was that why would people pay more for an option in the U.S. that on paper doesn't give them any more efficiency? In real world, it does, but they just chose not to offer it because the EPA, the way they test the car, it does not add any efficiency to it. So,
It's true. Yeah, I'm not sure from what I gathered if this is going to be an option, if it's going to be standard. But if it is standard, it's user selectable, so you can turn the system on, you can turn the system off. It's been tested extensively throughout Europe, and there hasn't been any longevity issues with the cars. So
yeah, it's a little freaky to me. It's a little freaky sounding to me still.
Yeah, the first time I used it was a little like the car just died.
That's a feature, not a flaw. It's a feature.
Yeah. And then you step on the accelerator, and it fires right back up, and you go like nothing happened. So,
like a golf cart, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true.
Absolutely. And a little tidbit for I just had my M serviced for the 30,000 mile service. New plugs, new oil, new diff fluid, new everything. And the car runs amazing now. I was having a little rough idle. And I think that was because the plugs were just on their way out.
You M owners, you actually have to get things done to your cars.
As do the JCW owners, yeah.
That's true. Well,
30,000 miles on spark plugs every, wow.
I get arguable. New plugs every... Dude, I got new plugs at 10,000 miles.
It's arguable, though.
It is, but...
As we know.
Hey, I showed them the bulletin, and they paid for it, so...
Anyway.
Yeah, the plugs in the M3 actually are also the knock sensors, so they get changed quite often.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Interesting.
Fancy.
Interesting.
Well, on that note, questions, comments, and concerns, DB, I'm stealing this from you.
Dude, you can't steal my words, dude.
Why don't you do it? It's all you.
I don't know what the email address is for Bimmerfile.
Push
the damn button, fool.
Yeah, go to the website, click the contact form. That's what it is.
Questions, comments, or concerns, gang, you know what to do, right? Click back over to Bimmerfile.com. Click on the contact link at the top of the page. There's a handy-dandy form. You can just fill it out and press the send button. There's no voicemail line, though.
It warms my heart. It really does that you do that. It's a really special occasion to have you guys here. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me. And thank you. You are more than welcome anytime, both of you guys, to the show. We are going to be doing this every week. So obviously, anytime you guys want to stop by, you know where to find us.
My pleasure. Outstanding, Gabe. Thanks again for having us on.
Thanks, guys.
Always a pleasure.
Talk to you.
All right. Well, until next week, have a fantastic week, and we will be talking to you on Bimmercast number 25 very soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Prost.
Later.